Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You could bet on absolutely anything. If you want to bet on UConn, or North Carolina fans can get in on this year to bet them to win the title, all the way down to teams like Stetson and Longwood to win the title. You can even bet individual seeds to win the title. You can bet anything on DraftKings for the tournament. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having an incredible week. Well, we have a weird kind of stretch here in the season for the Los Angeles Lakers. They played on Monday against the Atlanta Hawks, and then we get three consecutive days off before we get into a matchup with the Sixers, albeit without Joel Embiid, on Friday. I thought it was a good point. We haven't talked with Jovan since March 5th, after the Lakers got a big win against the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've played six games since then. They've gone 3-3. They have wins against the Bucks, Timberwolves, and Hawks. Two quality wins in there. Losses to the Warriors and the Kings twice. All three pretty concerning losses. So good chance for us to take a little bit of like a deep dive into the Lakers before we head into the stretch run to see if there's anything left to be achieved this season. Jovan, you guys know he covers the Lakers for The Athletic, does an incredible job. Also is doing some instant reaction content and other analysis on his YouTube channel. Let's get into it. Jovan, I want to get to the housekeeping stuff before we get into some of the basketball talk. So there's been lots of conflicting reports about the injured Lakers players and their return to the floor and their timelines. I've seen stuff saying from Darvin saying that Gabe and Jared Vanderbilt are progressing nicely. I've seen reports that none of them are going to come back this season at all whatsoever. For the record, 3 weeks from Sunday is the final game of the regular season. So I'm going to try to nail you down to a date here, Jovan. What is your best guess as to when Gabe Vincent returns to the lineup?
That's the tough one. So from conversations I've had with people in and around the team, there's more optimism that Jared Vanderbilt is going to be making his return before the end of the regular season. Gabe Vincent, I've also heard conflicting things. I've heard he's done. He's not returning, at least in the regular season. And I've heard he's really pushing, and it's just a matter of like another week or two. So if I had to guess, I would put it like the last week of the season, but it does seem from most of the information that I've heard, it is trending toward him, being more likely to not return, at least in the regular season. So if I'm putting the odds, like maybe 75% toward not returning in the regular season in comparison to, coming back. So that one's a tricky one, but it does sound like if he does come back, it's more likely final like week and a half maybe is the most optimistic return date for him.
I'm on the fence with Gabe Vincent because like part of me goes he's one of the few guys on the roster who is a semi-competent perimeter defender, and so that would be immensely valuable in this group. But the other side of that, I look at the roster and I look at kind of Spencer Dinwiddie as the same type of guy but bigger and probably not as good off the ball, but better on the ball, probably a little bit better defensively than Gabe as well. And so I don't really see much of a rotation opportunity. Like, I don't think you're going to jam Gabe into the rotation and kick Austin or D'Lo out. It's going to be Spencer that sacrifices minutes. And then obviously guys like Max and Cam that end up sacrificing minutes. And so then I look at the other side of it and I go, if he has a knee issue, he's on a 3-year contract, right? If I'm not mistaken, I think there's a player option in the final year. So like Lakers have team control over him next year for sure. We have talked a lot and we're going to talk more later in the show about, potentially the foundation of this team needing to be shifted and then potentially having to make an all-in type of deal. And if they did, like if they made a deal for like a Trae Young, for instance, chances are an Austin Reeves is going to be in that type of deal. Chances are all three draft picks that become available at the draft would be included in that sort of deal. All of a sudden, a guy like Gabe Vincent at $11 million a year still on the payroll becomes immensely valuable to the team heading into the following season if you were to make that sort of trade. And so I almost feel like getting him healthy into next season is more important than trying to rush him back this year into a role that's not necessarily as kind of like open and waiting for him as people think. Would you agree with me there?
Yeah, and I think you can make the same case for Vando. Like Vando has more of an immediate opportunity to make an impact for this group just given his skill set, but he has a 4-year extension that kicks in next season. So from the Lakers' perspective, it's not like either one of these guys are impending free agents where as cold as it might be, like you don't necessarily factor in their future with your group, and it's just about like, hey, can you help us make a run in the postseason? But with both players, they have something invested longer term, and potentially putting that at risk for a group that right now is looking like it's going to be locked into the 9 or 10 game, depending on barring a disaster from Dallas or Phoenix, like the Lakers are going to be the 9 or 10 seed. So I think for them, it's something they're kind of weighing too, of just like, I think Vando is a more, again, more likely to return. And that's the one that, I mean, players have been openly talking about it. I've kind of found it funny where Rui Hachimura, we were talking to him at practice and he had a line of like talking about the starting lineup. And he was basically like, and Vando's going to come back and it's going to help our defense. And then Anthony Davis had another quote where he was talking about lineups and he was like, yeah, then Vando's going to come back and that's going to shift things. So players have been openly, basically saying that Vando is coming back at some point. Now with the Lakers injury history this season, it's been all over the place in terms of information and what's been real, what hasn't been. Gabe came back technically in December and then had a setback and we haven't seen him since. So like it has been kind of all over the place with that stuff. But I definitely think with Gabe, there's an element of you have him for a couple of years in theory, and whether it's preserving him as a trade asset or just preserving him as a potential guy who could step in and be that 3-and-D guard around your stars that you wanted him to be initially, I think there's some incentive there to not rush him back and force him to potentially re-injure it. And then with Vando, again, I think there's more urgency just because we saw right before the break, or you know, right before he got injured, like he was playing great and he was headed toward returning to the starting lineup. And the Lakers had that double overtime win against the Warriors. That group, the group that they started last season with, you know, played the final 16 minutes of that game and played great. And Vando, they were figuring out ways to use him offensively. He was shooting threes with confidence, operating at the elbows, operating as a cutter. So like they were starting to kind of figure it out. And just this is the way the Lakers season has gone. Another, you know, unfortunate break for them. But I think Vando is the one that I have more optimism in terms of his return. And I'm sure you're gonna ask, so I'll just say, like, I think that one's more within the next couple weeks, but there's still hurdles. Like, neither player has returned to practice yet, and that's a big sign of, like, you know, can they start doing contact?
Still a ways out.
So it's still a ways out, but based on both what we've seen publicly from the players kind of openly saying Vando's coming back, to some of the conversations behind the scenes, there's a lot more internal optimism with Vando.
His foot freaks me out a little bit from the standpoint of, like, your initial point, which is, like, there's a case to be made that even with Vando, you're thinking about the future. And specifically, his foot strain was in that, like, upper middle part of his foot, which is where you can get into some weird injuries that could potentially be, you know, substantial, like, 6 to 9 month type of injuries. And so I understand some of the reticence to force him back out there. That said, if he is ready, I think he's got to go. And the main reason why is he literally, you know, this Laker team is so interesting to me because they are not like team. They don't have like team wide issues that are completely and utterly unaddressable, that are impossible to overcome. So, for instance, like, they don't have a team speed issue down the line. They actually have a good amount of speed at specific position groups, right? You know, like, LeBron is still a guy that can bring speed and pace in transition. Jackson Hayes runs the floor really well. Anthony Davis, when he's engaged, can run up and down the floor. It's like just this specific position group. It's that like kind of 2-3 position group where they have very little speed, and they have very little, like, they don't have a player on the roster, like we've talked about all year, that is a legitimate starter caliber guy that can play on both ends of the floor. And so, to me, any hope for the Lakers making some sort of run surrounds Jared Vanderbilt sliding back into that three spot in the starting lineup. And more specifically, like, you know, kind of as we shift forward here, we're talking about this most recent stretch since the OKC game, 3-3. They beat the Bucks and the Timberwolves, two teams that are kind of slower, right? And down the roster. And they have fast guys on the roster, obviously, but they're a little slower down the roster. Then they run into teams like Golden State and Sacramento that have a ton of team speed that cause them a lot of problems. And so I look at Jared Vanderbilt as the kind of guy that gives them a little bit more resiliency against some of their weaker matchups. And so from that standpoint, like he is a complete and total necessity. And what's so interesting is you had talked about, I remember heading into the deadline, that the Jared Vanderbilt injury was going to add a layer of urgency for them to address that perimeter defense group. And it's interesting because we knew that. Everyone knew that, including the team. And then when Jared gets hurt, you go this extended stretch without that position group filled, and then you have all of these issues. But over the last six games, since the Oklahoma City win, obviously it's been a lot of up and down. What have you learned about the Lakers over that span?
Oof. Well, I've learned that Sacramento is a terrible matchup for them, and it doesn't make sense. I did a podcast episode on my podcast, kind of ranking first the five potential play-in opponents and then the top four in the West. So assuming they get through the play-in, these are the top four teams, and like how do they match up? And on paper, I wanted to put Sacramento as the easiest matchup, but I kind of hedged it and put them third. And that was before the two losses to them. So like now it's like, okay, they can't beat Sacramento for whatever reason. Like, Domantas Sabonis is just a terrible matchup for AD. De'Aaron Fox is a terrible matchup for the Lakers backcourt. And maybe if you get Vando back and he has enough time to ramp up and get back to starter level minutes, like, he can take that assignment and make an impact in that game. But I was pretty discouraged with the way, because we've talked about it all season, where this group, like, one of the things that if you're trying to make the case for the Lakers going on a deep run has been their ability in single elimination formats, and just sort of like when the stakes are high, this group rises to the occasion. And we saw it in the in-season tournament. We saw it last year when they went on that run and needed to reel off, you know, 18, 19 games to close the season. They did that. They make the conference finals. So, like, you know, yes, they have a Denver problem. And, I mean, who doesn't in the league right now? But, you know, putting that aside, like, for the most part, they've fared well against most of the West. But the problem has been, like, we're looking at that 3-3 stretch. The three games they needed to win were the three games they lost. Like 3-3 would have been fine if they beat Sacramento twice and beat Golden State once. But the games they won, like, you know, every game matters at this point. But the teams that they're in direct competition with were the teams that they lost to. And that is what, you know, put them in this 9-10 hole now, where you're potentially going to have to, you know, so they close the season out at Memphis, at New Orleans. Now you potentially have to go, you know, at Golden State, than like at Phoenix or Dallas just to get into the playoffs. And then you're potentially going to Denver for a game one. So you're on like a 5-game road trip through the first you know, game of the playoffs. And like, that's just a brutal way to start a series. So the fact that they couldn't get at least one of those Sacramento wins was a bit concerning to me. And for the first time really this season, it did raise the question of like, can this team actually ratchet it up when they need to? Can they rise to the occasion in a, because that was essentially like a must-win game, like both of them were. And then once you lose the first one, it's like you have to go into Sacramento and win that game. And the fact that, like, yes, you know, D'Lo had an off night, but then I look at LeBron and like his defensive effort and just the way that he kind of mailed it in. Like I went back and watched all 19 made threes for the Kings, and about half of those you could attribute to some form of LeBron James either mistake or apathy defensively. And the fact that he had that type of performance defensively in such a big game was concerning. But then he comes out and he drops 40 on Golden State and almost, you know, single-handedly kind of wills them into a close game down the stretch. And then he destroys Atlanta and sets the tone early and comes out and is just attacking the rim. So like, it's just, this team has continued to be like night to night. You don't really know what you're getting. The highs are high, the lows are low. And, but I would say like that, My biggest takeaway was sort of like they had several situations there where they needed to win if they wanted to potentially rise in the standings. And the fact that they couldn't get it done, that was the first real time I started to kind of doubt, like, is this team really just who they've been all season, which has been an inconsistent group mm-hmm. that is a 9 or 10 seed? And 9 or 10 seeds typically lose in the play-in or probably in the first round.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the 5-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Does the craziness of everyday life leave you feeling stressed and shedding? Since having kids, have you started to see a little more of your scalp? Are you unhappy with your hairline? When it comes to thinning hair, there are many root causes at play, and Nutrafol addresses them through a multi-targeted, whole-body approach. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, and faster-growing hair with less shedding. Physician-formulated, with drug-free ingredients, Nutrafol supports healthy hair growth from within by targeting key root causes of thinning: stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism through whole body health. Take their hair wellness quiz at Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes. With Nutrafol, building a hair growth routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription or doctor's visits required. Free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day and you'll see results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker and healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled N-U-T-R-A-F-O-L.com, promo code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code HOOPS. Yeah, the Warriors game, you just have to chalk up to bad luck. Like, I genuinely think, like, at least 2 out of 3 times they play that game with a healthy Anthony Davis, they win.
I agree.
And like that, but at the same time, like, when you go 3-10 in the middle of the season, that cuts substantially into your margin for error, which is, you know, like, that's the reality. You and I were talking before we recorded. If they go 7-7 in that stretch, or 7-6 in that stretch, or even just 6-7 in that stretch, literally, if they went 6-7 in that stretch, they're tied for the 7 seed right now, like, and 1 game back of Sacramento. You know, you're in a predicament where, you know, if you're in that 4-5-6-7-8 range, and Anthony Davis gets an elbow to the eyeball, and he's out for the rest of the night, and you take a loss, you can weather that storm and you can survive it, but you cut substantially into your margin for error with all the shenanigans in the middle of the season. The Sacramento games, it's tough, because the first one, I really just think, like, it was the kind of thing that happened a few times to the Lakers at home over the course of the season, like the Brooklyn Nets game, the Phoenix Suns game where they came in and beat them, where it's almost like they, once they let go of the rope, it's really hard for them to regain control of the situation. Like, they played really well in the Brooklyn game to start, and then when Brooklyn started going at them, they just could never regain the situation. Same thing with Sacramento. Really good at the start. Then they get blitzed in that second quarter run, and they can never regain control of the situation. The road game, it was just so many things went poorly from the start. Like, literally, D'Angelo Russell has another disaster of a game. Anthony Davis has a disaster of a game. And then LeBron has a disaster of a game. And, like, even though I do think Sacramento is a bad matchup for the Lakers and they give them a bunch of issues, like, I don't think that LeBron, AD, and D'Lo are going to play terribly every single time they play against them. Like, LeBron, for all of the, like, you talked about it, like, LeBron literally in that game was just ducking under picks on Harrison Barnes and just letting him kind of settle into those easy kind of pullback threes. Wasn't making any sort of low man rotations, wasn't engaging himself physically to try to score the basketball. Like, it was just a float through type of night when he's literally the one guy out of their core guys. Cause D'Lo does struggle against speed and ball pressure. Anthony Davis does struggle against low center of gravity power bigs. LeBron James has eaten Harrison Barnes's lunch every time they've played, basically, in his NBA career. That is a huge matchup advantage for him, and he just didn't bring it on a big night. Who knows what was going on, but he just didn't have it. And so, like, it's unfortunate because, like, literally just in that stretch, you get the win against Golden State at home, and you just split against Sacramento. You're 5-1. And you're sitting 1 game back of the 7 seed. And so it's unfortunate. And so Austin Reeves said, and after practice yesterday, said that he felt the intensity ratchet up after the last 2 losses. Here's my question. At this point in the season, like, should Laker fans just accept this Laker team for what it is, which is pretty mediocre? Or do you really think that they have a level they can ratchet up to try to salvage this situation?
I think there's a level that they can ratchet up to, but I want to see it for more than 1 game against an Atlanta Hawks team that was 7 games under 500 entering the game and didn't have their best player in Trae Young, or arguably their best player if you want to make the case for DeJounte Murray. But, like, I think them beating the Hawks by 30 was nice, but it's still the Hawks. And, like, to me, I want to see them close out so to close the homestand, they have the Philadelphia 76ers on Friday, the Indiana Pacers on Sunday. Like, I want to see them beat both of those teams and go into this 6-game road trip with some momentum. And you know, I think those are both winnable games. Sixers, obviously, without Embiid. Pacers, you already beat them in the in-season tournament. And you know, their defense has obviously, you know, been historically bad at, you know, at times this season. So like, I want to see that and then go into the road trip and go at least 4-2. And if they can reel off a stretch here of like 6-2 over their next 8 games, that to me is ratcheting it up. That to me is showing you guys are serious about closing the season. You're not just mailing it. Cause at this point, like, I mean, I know Houston's been hot lately and they've been on something of a run, but like, really it's just a matter of like, the Lakers are going to be the 9 seed or the 10 seed, right? Like Dallas, again, Dallas, like Luka probably has to get injured, or like the Suns, like KD or Booker has to go out, and those teams have to go under 500 for the rest of the season for the Lakers to have a realistic shot to ascend in the standing. So barring that, it's just a matter of, are you ahead of the Warriors or are you, you know, behind them? And really, I think with the way that the Lakers have played at Chase Center, like they could beat the Warriors on the road. Like, I would not be surprised by that. They did it last season. They've done it this season. So like, I don't think home court advantage, like, I think it probably matters a little bit more for the Lakers just because the Warriors historically haven't played as well at crypto.com. Like Steph and Clay, their shooting numbers over the last few years have been a little bit lower. So like, if the Lakers are the 9 seed, I do think they're going to win that matchup. If they're the 10, it's probably a little closer to 50-50. But like, realistically, the Lakers could just kind of mail it in for the next 12-13 games and be fine. And just be, again, you're the 10 seed. All right, whatever. Like, you're basically on the same path. But to me, if they show a level of urgency over the next 8 games and go, like, one thing here is that they've been a terrible road team. And they, you know, we can count like Boston, New York, like the memorable road wins. You can kind of and, you know, Clippers, like, but some of those, for the most part, they've beaten lottery teams on the road. So like, this is a good stretch where you got Washington, Toronto, Brooklyn, you know, now Milwaukee, Indiana. Those are a couple tougher games, but like, if they can go at least 4-2 on that 6-game trip, that to me is showing like this is a serious basketball team entering the play-in stretch with some momentum. If not, if they go 4-4 or 3-5 or whatever, like, I think at that point you just kind of have to say like, that's who they are. And whether they get Vando back, whether they get Gabe back, whether they get Christian back for the play-in, like whatever, it probably just doesn't matter at that point.
I think personal limitations are part of it. Like honest to God, guys, this is a group that has a gaping hole at one of the most important position groups in the NBA, which is like your point of attack defender group. It's been literally the biggest narrative surrounding the team all season long. That said, I do think effort is part of it because like the LeBron game in Sacramento, like Anthony Davis in both Sacramento games, like AD got his butt kicked in both Sacramento games, like literally. And so there's a certain element to it where LeBron and AD bring the physicality in the group, right? And Rui as well. And then Austin and D'Lo and Torian and a little bit of Spencer as well, they bring most of the offensive skill elements to the table, right? There's a certain level of variance there just with shot making and things along those lines. But if you get a combination of a specific personnel weakness at the point of attack and a lack of engagement from your front court, things can fall apart pretty quickly. And I think it is genuinely a piece of both. And there's a conversation to be had about LeBron James and Anthony Davis as the foundation. And I want to do that here in just a second, but I want to stay on the play-in for a minute. So I'm just going to put you on the spot and then I'll give my thoughts. Do you think the Lakers play a 7-game series in April?
Honestly, with the way the last couple of weeks have gone, I'm going to say no. I think they win the first play-in game and lose the second play-in game. That's how I see it playing out.
So this is super interesting to me because the Lakers are in a weird way built for the play-in tournament in a different way than some other teams. They do not rely on variance as much as everyone else. They're actually a good shooting team now. That's been like one of the most underplayed elements of the Lakers this season. They are now 9th in three-point percentage for the entire season. Remember all those metrics we were talking about early on about how they were just terrible at shooting in every phase, which, by the way, you and I kind of saw coming because we talked about during those phases, like, these were good shooters that weren't making shots. Like, the Lakers just have a roster full of good shooters. It didn't make sense that they were shooting as poorly as they were. And a lot of it had to do with just the rhythm and flow of their five-out offense. They're shooting 40% from three since January 1st. That's the second best mark in the league over a now almost a 3 month span. So like they can really shoot, but they're 29th in attempts. Like they don't take a ton of them. And they're second in points in the paint per 100 possessions since January 1st. So like this is a team that like in any one game sample size, they do experience less variance in terms of jump shot result than most teams simply because they don't take a ton. That does bode well. I'm going to look at this through the lens of Jared Vanderbilt being there. I think the Lakers are going to get the 9 seed. I think they're going to be end up above Golden State. A big part of that is right now they're a game up and they have a home game against Golden State on April. It's like April 9th, like week or two of April.
It's a must win.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe the Lakers will win that game. So if they have Jared Vanderbilt and they're healthy and they're good to go, I think they'll win that game. Even without Jared Vanderbilt, I give them a good chance to win that game. I think in a LeBron AD physically imposing type of game, I think they would just find a way. So if they win that game, they're effectively two games up on Golden State. So I think they're going to end up getting that 9 seed. We get into a play-in setting. I believe obviously you'd be foolish to count Steph out. I'm not sitting here pretending like the Warriors can't win that game, but I would pick the Lakers to win that 9-10 game. Then we go on the road, and they're going to be against somebody in that group that we talked about, Sacramento, Phoenix, Dallas, right? All three of those groups, at the very least, LeBron, if not LeBron and AD, will have substantial physical advantages on the front line. And so if they can drag that game down into the mud, I like their chances. But what you always have to be cognizant of is like the buzzsaw type of game where you go in and the other team hits four of their first five threes and you're down by 9-10, you know, points in the first 5-6 minutes. And this team does have a little bit of like a let go of the rope thing going on, which we talked about earlier about the Brooklyn game and the Sacramento game. So like I do think that I'm going to, according to Vegas, they have a little bit less than a 50% chance of getting in. I'm going to go on the other side of that and give them a little bit more than a 50% chance of getting in. I will not be the least bit surprised if they get eliminated. But I do think that it's not hard for me to see the Lakers winning a home play-in game and then going on the road and LeBron and AD just kind of playing bully ball and getting it done. And so I'm going to give them, let's just say, a 55% chance that I think they play a full 7-game series. And then from there, like, who the hell knows? Like, the top of the West is still completely jammed together. Like, that could go in 17 different directions here down the stretch. So, like, I maintain there's just a tiny, tiny, tiny little light at the end of the tunnel. We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the 5-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot. The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
Last thing I wanted to get into before we get out of here today. After this season, we have a mostly healthy LeBron James and Anthony Davis, with a lot of young talent around them, albeit a roster that has some gaping holes. And you did some venting early on about the medical staff, and there's some legitimacy to that. But for the most part, it's been a healthy LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and we're sitting in this play-in situation again. So do you think after this season, if the Lakers did get eliminated or if they lost in the first round, do you think they're... we've reached a point where the Lakers have to consider tweaking the LeBron James, Anthony Davis foundation? Is that good enough anymore?
I think it's still good enough. And I will read you some numbers here. So these are per cleaning the glass. LeBron and AD on the floor have outscored opponents by 3.3 points per 100 possessions, which if you extrapolate that to a team context, that would put them as like the ninth or 10th best net differential in the league. LeBron and AD with no Taurean Prince, plus 9.6 points per 100 possessions, which would be the second best mark in the NBA behind the Boston Celtics. And the context there, of course, is like, obviously Taurean, if you're bringing him off the bench and he's just, you know, a second unit guy playing 15 to 20 minutes a night, he's of course going to spend some level of time with LeBron and AD. But most of those minutes have come with starting groups and closing groups and like critical stretches of you're closing like the first half, you're closing a game. So really, I mean, the data is there of like the Lakers have been much better with those two without Taurean. And that's often been with Jared Vanderbilt or Rui Hachimura or Christian Wood as that third front court guy. And then looking at the big four, I'll call them. So that's the LeBron, AD, Austin, D'Lo. Plus 4 points per 100 possessions, which is eighth best mark in the league in a team context. The big four without Taurean, so that's basically any starting group that doesn't include Taurean and again, some closing groups, plus 6.9 points per 100 possessions, which is wow. The fourth best mark. So the lineup data is there where basically any version of LeBron and AD or LeBron, AD, Austin, D'Lo without Taurean has been pretty successful. And of course, the sample size is a bit smaller because they have played so many minutes with Taurean. So like maybe in an alternate universe, like Rui starts or Vando is healthy and the numbers still aren't as great as they've been without Taurean. But like really like Taurean's last on the team in plus minus by almost double the next guy. The next guy, next lowest is Jackson Hayes. Taurean's almost double him. So like there's just been a sample size of Taurean Prince has been overtasked with the starting role. The Lakers have been better with him in bigger lineups. And instead, the Lakers have continued to go opposite where they're playing him at the four for a lot of stretches. Like he's basically become the backup power forward over the stretch without Vando, without Christian. So like I don't want to put it all on Taurean to be clear, but I do think that there's still a foundation there of like LeBron and AD. You look at the in-season tournament championship. You look at some of their, like, they're 3-1 against the Clippers. They're 3-2 against the Suns. They're 3-1 against the Thunder. Like, they've been at least 500 or better against most of the West, with Denver being an exception, Sacramento, and Minnesota. So, like, just looking at that, I still think, you know, with the right players or supporting pieces, like, this is a group that can contend for championships. Now, what I will say, though, is you have to nail the rest of the roster and you have to nail the lineups and the rotation. And I think the Lakers have fallen short in both regards, right? And part of it has been out of their control where, like, Gabe Vincent was their primary offseason addition. He's played 5 games. And in theory, like, the theory of Gabe Vincent around LeBron and AD, it's a guy who can play off the ball, be a plus shooter, take that basically that Dennis role that they didn't have until they got Spencer Dinwiddie and be a point of attack guy and defend either backcourt spot. Jared Vanderbilt has missed over half the season now. A guy who is the projected starting small forward. So like some of the stuff has been injury related and out of their control. But again, I think they didn't have enough perimeter defense in general. I don't think they have enough dirty work guys. And then looking at the lineups and the rotations, like Torian Prince starting 49 games was just a mistake. And it just never made sense from the beginning. And the Lakers pivoted from not having Jared Vanderbilt, because that was the plan. He was going to be the starter. Once they kind of started sifting through things in training camp, he gets injured in the second preseason game. And then I know you've talked about it a lot, the Galaxy branding things. Like, instead of just going to Rui Hachimura, who's a guy you just invested in for $17 million a year, you go to Torian Prince, who is a career journeyman bench wing. And not only do you go to him, you don't even make him really like a placeholder starter. Like, you're playing him 30 to 35 minutes a night, and he's shattering all these minutes records that he hasn't reached since his second season in the league. And the lineups have just been bad. And then instead of pivoting and saying, okay, we tried this, it's not working, you bench Austin, and then you bench D'Lo. And then at one point you have your third, fourth, and fifth highest paid players coming off the bench for a team that is top heavy. And it just doesn't make sense from like a financial perspective of, this is a group where you should be playing your highest paid players, because that was the way that this roster was formed. And so I know I'm going on a bit of a rant here, but like, just in looking at it, it's been clear there is still that foundation of a championship contender, in my opinion, with LeBron and AD and when healthy. But you got to nail the guys around them. I think that was kind of hit or miss. And then you got to nail the rotations and the lineups. And I think that's been a big miss this season.
Everything you just broke down, all those decisions, that all coincided in the 3-10 stretch, which is like, if the Lakers do not play in a first round playoff series, that is what we have to point to as where it all went wrong. Because just simply based on the standings, they have been a good playoff team outside of that 3-10 stretch. That's where it all went wrong. And that was when all that Galaxy branding was taking place. Here's the thing. I do believe in LeBron James and Anthony Davis as a playoff duo. I think that when you get into that setting and they both are engaged physically more often than not, they are deeply impactful on both ends of the floor, both as offensive and defensive players. And I think the best giveaway of that is like, LeBron and AD are better now than they were last year. They're better basketball players now than they were last year. And last year they were good enough to take their team to the Western Conference Finals. Here's the thing though, both ends of the floor for those guys depend on a certain level of physical exertion, right? LeBron James is probably the biggest chasm between the night-to-night defensive effort and his defensive ceiling that you have in the league. Totally makes sense. He's 39 years old. But on any given night, he's a bad defensive player. And then when he tries, he's a very good defensive player. It's like, it's a crazy chasm between the two sides. And then even with Anthony Davis, like it's weird, because when AD is really engaged defensively, he's best defensive player in the world, complete world stopper. But then like his night to night effort sometimes can go from that to something significantly lower as well. And then when you go to the offensive end of the floor, because teams switch their ball screens, because they double team them in the post a lot, like so much of LeBron and AD's offensive success comes down to physical exertion. And so because of that, because you have a 31-year-old AD who's had a bunch of injuries and generally is a guy that's not necessarily the highest motor player in NBA history, and because LeBron James is 39 years old, in the regular season for 82 games, you have a foundation that depends so much on LeBron and AD playing hard and playing with physical exertion. And so when they don't, like that, like one of the biggest things that went wrong in that Sacramento game is LeBron and AD just didn't bring it physically when they went on the road. And so again, like what I look at is like, when you're an offensive minded star, like let me just talk about like Luka, for instance, because even on Luka's nights where he's not playing any defense, he's still just a supernova offensively. All of these guys that are like that, they do play hard on offense every night because offense is fun and they have this supreme skill set. And so they can bring it every single night. And in the 82 games, it impacts winning more than the two-way player that's dependent on effort and energy, because that effort and energy can wane. And when it wanes, their athletic gifts are not being weaponized as much. And so they don't have as much impact. And so I think there is a conversation to be had about LeBron and AD in the regular season. And the conversation is very simple. You either need to surround them with high motor athletes, or you need to surround them with, or put them next to, a supremely gifted offensive player. And no, Austin Reaves and D'Angelo Russell are not good enough. So, like, that's the thing. Like, one of the things that I see in a potential Trae Young acquisition, if they were to make that sort of move this summer, and it could completely gut the depth chart and leave them some other holes. But at the very least, over an 82-game regular season, Trae Young brings so much to the table offensively that it would make up for a lot of the lack of physical exertion you can get from time to time for LeBron and AD. What you can't have anymore is, like I think this season has been a strong indicator that just surrounding them with offensive skill that does not bring high motor athleticism to the table is not good enough, because those offensive players are not good enough to carry the offense. They require LeBron and AD to bring a certain level of physical exertion, and then they're also not good enough defensively. And so this team has been so dependent on LeBron and AD's effort. And so on any given night, when LeBron and AD really bring it, they can beat the best teams in the league, but they can lose to anybody because of the exact same reason. And so this particular build, which is essentially, I would argue, it's offensive skill around LeBron and AD. It's D'Lo, it's Austin, it's Torian Prince. Even Rui Hachimura is a guy that brings a certain level of physicality to the table, but he can not rebound as well as you'd like and not defend as well as you'd like from time to time. The only guy there that's a professional defender is Jared Vanderbilt. He's the only guy. And so now that he's gone, you've seen all of those limitations. And so I think that after this season, like, you absolutely have to tweak in one of those two directions. You either need to get a star guard in here, like a real star guard that can run the entire offense for 82 games, so that LeBron and AD can do what they want to do for 82 games, which is set screens and roll into the open parts of the floor and let other people do the work. That's just their personality at this point. So you either got to do that, or you got to put a bunch of Carusos and Vanderbilts and Bruce Browns types around them, so that even if they don't bring a ton of physicality to the table, the other guys will, and then you can win with defense. But I do think, as much as I agree with you that I believe in the LeBron and AD ceiling, I do think that they've got to do something different in the regular season, because this doesn't work. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, we're totally in agreement. Like, I think... And that's where I was kind of getting at, is like, I mean, I don't think they nail the supporting pieces. Like, I don't think they have enough of the dirty work guys. And like, they have this, like, if you look at some of the trends of the guys that they've signed, it's been a lot of pedigree guys, right? Like, I mean, Christian Wood, even though he wasn't a pedigree guy coming into the NBA, he's kind of become, he's a name, at least if you're comparing him to like some of the other backup bigs in the league. Like, most people know who Christian Wood is at this point. And then even Cam Reddish or Jackson Hayes, like, I think they need, like, and I think even if they go the third star root, like, you still have to add those dirty work guys, and it's going to be like a bunch of minimum dudes. Mm-hmm. But I think this roster ended up, and hindsight's always 2020, and it's easy for us to sit here and criticize it, although I think we did have some of these concerns entering the season, and I think they've bore out to some extent. But like, this roster, I do think ultimately trended more offensive than defensive, and then your margin for error was so slim with it, where you lose two of your better perimeter defenders in Gabe and well, your best in Vando, and then one of your best in Gabe. And like, then all of a sudden it teeters. And like that. So I've been looking at, for me, everything with the Lakers and kind of how I've been judging them recently has been looking at the numbers since February 3rd, because that is when Rui Hachimura entered the starting lineup. And that's basically been their rotation. Christian played some of that, but like, no Vando, because I think it's kind of pointless until we know Vando is for sure coming back, or we see him back in the lineup
for sure.
Like, look at those numbers. Since then, they are second in the league in offense and 27th in defense, and that's where some of my pessimism comes in with them making a run in the play-in, is like, I just don't have confidence in their defense right now, and part of that is just the, you know, injuries and how things have shaken out, but like, part of it is the roster construction. And like, so I look at it, I think they need some of those dirty work wing and guard types, but I also think they need a big man that you can comfortably close games with next to Anthony Davis in certain matchups against the Sabonis, against the Jokic, against even if Nurkic is just, you know, killing him for whatever reason. Like, you need that kind of big bruiser that it, and it's a tough player to find, that, you know, they don't grow in tree, like, because ideally that player has some level of skill where they can be a DHO guy, or they could be potentially like a floor spacer, and again, that's a very difficult player archetype to find, but like someone you can at least play for 15 to 20 minutes a night against Denver and against some of the top teams in the league, and like have confidence that they can hold their own, and if need be, close next to Anthony Davis. And I don't think Christian Wood or Jackson Hayes is that level of big man. And I think moving forward, as they start to reshape and reallocate some of their resources, I do think investing in a better big man next to Anthony Davis should be not at the top of the list. I agree with you overall. Like, if you could get an elite 3D wing, or you could get an elite ball, guard ball handler to come in and be an upgrade over Austin and D'Lo, like, I think those two are probably greater needs. But right there at number three for me is a big man who you can comfortably play 15 to 20 minutes a night against good teams and close with AD, because I think not having that has shifted their lineups into being too small. And that's what you've seen lately, is like they've struggled on the glass. They've been playing again these lineups with like Cam when he's healthy, or Torian at the four. And like, that's not what you should be doing with this group. You should be playing bigger. All the lineup data shows Lakers are better when they're bigger. That's been the case this season. That was the case in 2020. Obviously, closing games, you're going to close with 80 at the five. But like, for the most part, for the meat and bones of the regular season, like, you got to go bigger. And for me, I think finding better, you know, big men that complement AD, again, is something that they kind of overlooked the last few years. They've tried the minimum guys. It hasn't worked. I think they need to go out and get a better second or third big, depending on how you want to label it.
Yeah, to your point, like instead of going after the thin athlete type, they need to get more of a big body, kind of a guy that can bang with the other big centers around the league. An example of a guy who might be somewhat affordable as an option there is someone in that like Xavier Tillman type of archetype, as a guy that like maybe can play two shifts alongside Anthony Davis in specific lineup groups. And I'm more talking about the archetype. I'm not even familiar with his contract situation off the top of my head, but like, that's the kind of guy that is like a lower level center in the big, in the league, that's more considered as a backup big that can like kind of slide into that kind of position. But again, bottom line, they need to have some sort of more physical foundation around LeBron and AD. Like, I think the best example of this offensive skill from a star kind of carrying you in the regular season that I can think of is like LeBron's jump shot. Like, think about how often this year the Lakers have been able to just kind of get through a regular season game that they otherwise would lose because LeBron's just hitting threes. I mean, even the Clippers game the other, like a month ago, that was a great example. Like, they lose that game by 15 points if LeBron just doesn't hit a bunch of threes. And that's the thing, is like, when you have an offensive skill superstar like a Luka or Trae Young, like, you're going to win a lot of games in the regular season just off of offensive skill. And that's the thing, is we found out, is like, Austin and D'Lo and even LeBron, they're not consistent enough as scorers to be able to do that sort of thing. LeBron requires a certain level of physical imposition to be a consistent offensive player. Same with AD. And then Austin and D'Lo are textbook like non-star guards that are going to have a certain level of inconsistency that is kind of natural with what their archetype is, right? But yeah, I'm really curious to see where they go, because like this, no matter what happens this year, I think this year was a complete and total giant red flag in terms of this particular roster build and for Darvin Ham. And so I'm really curious to see what they decide to do this summer. All right, Jovan, why don't you shout out for us what you've been working on as of late, so people can find your other content?
Yeah, so I recently started a podcast. It was actually around the time we did our last episode. So check out Buha's Block. I'm on episode 6, will be coming out on Friday. So I've been doing it twice a week, once a solo show, once with a guest. I have to have you on, Jason, and we'll flip the script and put you the analyst hat, and you know, I'll grill you a little bit. But Yeah, so that and then YouTube stuff. I've been churning out content, post-game reactions, and trying to get a video up every single day, trying to do a live stream once a week. So it's been fun. I've learned a lot from you and Paul and everyone here at The Volume, and you guys have really informed how I'm trying to build this out, and having a lot of fun with it. And if you enjoy our interviews here, I hope you consider checking it out.
Yeah, make sure you guys get over to check out Jovan's YouTube channel and his new podcast. We are definitely going to have him on a couple more times here down the stretch as we get into some of these more important regular season games. And then obviously as we head into the play-in game. And then, man, we are going to have a very interesting summer, Jovan. A lot of stuff to talk about when we get there. All right, guys, that is all we have for today. We probably are going to have a quick little instant reaction to Celtics Bucks coming out here in a couple of hours. And then tomorrow on Friday, we have the Nerd Sesh guys coming on to do three big NBA questions. And then we also have a mailbag for this weekend. I will see you guys then.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.